Here is what it sounded like yesterday when Republicans in the House of Representatives finally broke their deadlock.
Therefore, the Honorable Mike Johnson of the state of Louisiana, having received a majority of the votes cast, is duly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives for the 118th Congress.
It was the middle of the afternoon, and after 3 weeks of leaderless chaos, Louisiana's Mike Johnson was taking the gavel to become Speaker of the House.
Thank you.
If you are wondering, Mike who? You're not alone. Mike Johnson has been in office less than 7 years, and he was the fourth candidate for this job this month. He got shoved into the spotlight fast.
I want to thank my dedicated wife of almost 25 years, Kelly. She's not here. We couldn't get a flight in time. This happened sort of suddenly.
His introductory speech, it offered a lot to think about.
But we're going to celebrate soon. She spent the last couple of weeks on her knees in prayer to the Lord, and she's a little worn out. We all are. I want to thank our children, Michael and Hannah.
Johnson gave a personal biography, speaking about his dad, who was a firefighter. He talked a lot about God. He said he'd been moved to tears on the floor of Congress, overwhelmed by the enormity of his responsibility.
That said, there was a lot in his speech that was bullshit.
I called up Tim Miller to help me read between the lines. Tim spent years as a Republican strategist. Now he writes for The Bulwark.
The speech also included these overwrought comments about the institutional trust and the lack and the loss of trust with the people and how he's there to kind of regain that.
We are the beacon of freedom, and we must preserve this grand experiment in self-governance. It still is. We're only 247 years into this grand experiment. We don't know how long it will last, but we do know that the founders told us to take good care of it.
And it's like, okay, well, that's a nice thing to say, I guess, but he's not, he didn't do anything to demonstrate that he wants to regain that trust. In fact, Mike Johnson's been somebody that has been actively working to erode trust.
What Tim means here is that this pious-seeming guy, who's been pretty anonymous until now, has been fighting in the trenches for the conservative movement for a long time, including as the main architect of one of Donald Trump's schemes to flip the 2020 election.
But he wasn't just kind of one of the passive members that voted to overturn the election. He was whipping people to try to vote to overturn the election.
He literally sent a note to people saying, Donald Trump wants to see your signature on this amicus brief before the Supreme Court. Like, he wants to know who's behind him.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So he was being a Donald Trump, you know, whip, trying to pressure others to do it. He also was advancing some of the more crazy conspiracy theories, like the Dominion conspiracy.
That the voting machines were rigged.
Were rigged, right?
You tweeted about how earlier Matt Gaetz went on Steve Bannon's show to talk about Mike Johnson. And it's so funny because his language is so different than Mike Johnson's own. He was like, the swamp is on the run. MAGA is ascendant.
And if you don't think that moving from Kevin McCarthy to MAGA Mike Johnson shows the ascendance of this movement and where the power in the Republican Party truly lies, then you're not paying attention. But they are crying.
He's giving the mask off version of what Mike Johnson really is, right? Yeah, he's calling him MAGA Mike.
And these are words that Mike Johnson would never use himself.
No. He wouldn't. But I think Matt Gaetz is speaking what is true. This is why Mike Johnson is the speaker, not Matt Gaetz, right? And this is why Mike Johnson was the Goldilocks candidate, right? Because his actions are everything that the people that listen to Steve Bannon's podcast want. So that should be pretty scary. But his affect and his words are collegial.
Today on the show, the House finally has a speaker. But this Goldilocks candidate means the chaos is far from over. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick around.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Mike Johnson's name first broke through the noise on Tuesday night. Can you just lay out who he is, what he believes, what do we know about his background?
He's Mike Johnson is from Shreveport, Northwest Louisiana. You know, I think in a different era, he would have been really pretty much a Rick Santorum type Republican. You know, like just Christian conservative, cares a lot about social issues, you know, things in the gays and abortion and religious freedom space. And so, you know, I think that that is really kind of his natural place within the party as, you know, as part of the socially conservative wing. But as he has gotten into Congress, he has developed, I think, pretty good relationships with Steve Scalise, I think, helping, being for, also from Louisiana, with Republican leadership. He's demonstrated as the kind of guy that can, like, you know, do interviews and not sound like a crazy person, which is an important bar to pass in the Republican Party these days.
Yeah, sounding reasonable seems like his superpower.
Yeah, it is. And though he also, I think, recognized the Trump rise within the party and really was lockstep with Trump.
Yeah, he caught a shooting star. Like he would travel with Trump, and then he got very involved in January 6th and the litigation around it.
Yes. And so he wasn't like Elise Stefanik, right? Like he wasn't like somebody that flipped and then became an ostentatious defender of Trump. He was more like an operational defender of Trump on the Hill. And I think that Donald Trump likes those kind of people, right? Like the people that look the part.
Henchmen.
Yeah, henchmen that he feels like he could cast in the role of a henchman, right? And I think that like Mike Johnson really does. And so I think that he fit in that mold where he had a lot of cred on the right because of his views on social issues and his advocacy on social issues.
And we should be clear, he made this constitutional argument against Biden's victory in 2020, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And again, making it sound reasonable, saying like, listen, there was a pandemic, and that meant there were all these changes to how elections worked, and like really the legislature should be making those changes. That's what it says in the Constitution. But it was kind of like these other people, elections officials. And so it's like, those votes, like they don't count the same way. And you're like, huh, like you can see how he's drawing the lines, even if you disagree with the outcome of what he's saying.
Yeah. You know, I went to the Louisiana GOP convention a couple months ago now to cover it for the Bulwark. And this is a very MAGA crowd. And Johnson's remarks were very well received. And he was articulate and, you know, sounded intelligent, right? Louis Gohmert also spoke at this thing. He didn't sound like Louis Gohmert, you know what I mean? And so I heard that and I was like, man, this guy is somebody to watch because he's figured out how to give these guys the right MAGA red meat while also, you know, having an acceptable presentation for Face the Nation. So I think that demonstrates, you know, why he is somebody that they turn to, because this is something that the Republicans desperately need, right? Like they essentially had two groups in the party. They had the people that were, you know, basically old pre-MAGA Republicans that were pretending on the MAGA stuff in order to survive, right? And that is your Tom Emmers and your McCarthy's and your Patrick McHenry's. And then you had the MAGA members that are all just a little too weird to, like, do the Face the Nation thing, right? And to do the ceremony elements of the speakership that you have to do. And I think Johnson demonstrated that you can be a wild-eyed MAGA extremist who wants to turn the country into a Donald Trump autocracy and talk about it in a way that kind of sounds like, you know, I don't know. You're a captain of the high school debate team and drink milk for lunch and have a podcast about religion with your wife, which he does.
Yeah, I mean, you're making him sound like the just right bowl of porridge.
Yeah.
Mike Johnson did not really emerge as a potential speaker until a few days back. And even then, he was not a front runner. Initially, Tom Emmer won the party's nomination. But he quickly dropped out once it was clear he would not have the support of the MAGA wing. In the end, there were three candidates left, and Johnson came out on top.
And my sense was that the reason why Johnson was able to elevate above the other two was because, you know, the MAGA group was kind of divided among them, but among the more closet normal establishment Republicans, whatever you want to call them, they were more drawn to Johnson. And I think Johnson had built good, like, trustworthy relationships with leadership, just kind of based on at least how he presents himself down in Louisiana.
Looking at the winners and losers of the speaker fight, it's notable to me that Jim Jordan did not win the gavel, but Johnson did. And to me, it made me wonder, like, what does it mean? Like, what are the issues that are important to Republicans? Because Johnson and Jordan seem very similar when it comes to substance, but just different in style. It just made me wonder if, like, this is a party of optics at this point?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So I wrote about this for the Bulwark this morning, and I was like, if this was an ideological fight, this would have been over weeks ago, right? If this was over some policy issue or some ideology, then after McCarthy was deposed, the crazy H that started it and whoever their allies are would have gone to the conference and said, we will only go for a speaker that will do X, Y, and Z, you know, cut spending by X amount, or, you know, finish Donald Trump's wall, or whatever it is, right? Like, there'd be some specific thing that they wanted. But there wasn't anything like that. They had distaste for McCarthy and wanted to demonstrate power over him and wanted to demonstrate that the MAGA elements within the party were the ones that were in control, not the, you know, old establishment pre-Trump, you know, guys have been around forever.
To me, what was so weird is, like, people like Ken Buck, who just said they couldn't vote for Jim Jordan because of January 6th. But then all the Republicans lined up behind Johnson, who was the architect of election denialism.
Yeah. So you have your Kay Grangers and your, you know, other appropriator types, Tom Kaine and, you know, these, like, you know, the old bulls, if you will. And they went against Jordan. And some of that was interpersonal. Like, Jordan for a long time had been a thorn in their side, right? And so I think some of this was just good old high school cafeteria stuff. But I also think some of it was, yeah, optics, right? That, like, they did not feel like he was somebody that should be the face of the party. And they feel like Johnson could be. I think that they're in for a rude awakening. I really do. I think that they're in for a rude awakening with what they're going to get with this guy. And I think that a lot of folks are going to be regretting their votes.
It's funny because earlier in the week we did a show about the speaker mess in D.C., and I think I said it was a make or break week for Republicans. So I'm kind of curious, which was it? Was it make or break or both?
That's a good question, because I think it was make in the short term, but I think that they run a very big risk of break by next year. And let me explain why. You know, back when I was a Republican, we used to use the specter of Nancy Pelosi to really hurt suburban Democratic candidates, right? And certainly red state Democratic candidates, right? It's just like, you know, so-and-so from Georgia voted 92% of the time with a San Francisco liberal who wants to do all these far left things, right? Da-da-da-da-da. 30-second ad, they write themselves. The Democrats are now going to be able to give the Republicans a taste of their own medicine on this front. And all 18 of those guys in Biden districts, and even a handful that are in close Trump districts, now they have voted for and empowered somebody as Speaker of the House, as the leader of their party, who was complicit in the effort to overturn the election, supports bans on abortion with no exceptions, none, has had extremely far out anti-gay legislation, not just like the don't say gay stuff in Florida, but, you know, he wanted to allow gay sex to be criminalized, okay? And not to mention, climate change denier, wants to slash Social Security and Medicare. And I think it's going to hurt these guys, you know, to have to run and say, okay, I'm on board with the Trump reelect and one of his top lieutenants, who's this, like, Louisiana extreme evangelical. I don't think that plays in these California, New York districts that are the reason why Republicans have the House majority right now.
We'll be right back after a break.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
So let's talk about what happens now. Johnson is saying he's going to move really fast. He's trying to jam through legislation this week, but he's new to the job. He still doesn't really have a staff. I mean, you've worked behind the scenes with politicians for a long time. Is moving fast possible for Mike Johnson?
It might be possible on a couple things. I don't know what the deal was on the continuing resolution. That's the thing to watch. The government shutdown is until November, so we'll see how quickly they can move on that. So that is one thing. I think that, look, some of the stuff is back to optics, right? Can he move fast on the bill that says we condemn Hamas? Yeah, I guess. But I think that the thornier elements to this are going to be more complicated than he realizes.
Like actually funding things.
Yeah. I saw a list of things that it's on. It's like, we're going to do the farm bill at the end of the year. And it's like, okay, brother, I don't know. I feel like an old guy now. All of a sudden, I'm the old guy being like, back in my day. But I mean, I've been in D.C. during two farm bills when there were speakers and majorities that were decently effective and did get things passed where that thing got delayed forever. Because there are just all these random contingencies that you don't think of. You know, the sugar people are mad at the corn people, right? And it's just like, so this guy was a staff of eight and, you know, a bunch of people that are just new, that has never really had to do anything. He's not in a competitive district in Northwest Louisiana. Now he's got to go raise money, do all of this stuff to prepare for 2024. He's behind the eight ball. He's got to fund the government. They got to figure out what to do with the Ukraine. I think that it's going to be a steeper learning curve than he presented today.
Is Johnson going to be governed by the same rules Kevin McCarthy was haunted by? Like the rule that any member of the caucus can try to boot him out at any time if he strays from the rules?
He is, but I mean, technically Paul Ryan was also governed by that, and they just never really did it. And so, again, I think that he's in the sweet spot. I mean, Mike Johnson has been a just down-the-line right-wing congressman. That has, you know, there was, you know, some of these charts going around of like all of the controversial votes since Kevin McCarthy's gotten in, the debt ceiling bill and keeping the government open and gay marriage. None of these are really that controversial in, among normal society, but that are controversial within the Republican conference. And Johnson was on the side of the crazies on every one, you know, every single one. So what reason would they have to overthrow him? And there's no signs that the more, you know, moderate, I don't even like using that word anymore, but whatever, that the folks that stood in the way of Jim Jordan, you know, are going to show the backbone to use the same types of tactics that a Matt Gaetz did. So I think that he'll probably be clear on that front.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most important things Johnson's going to have to do is reach spending agreements with the Senate, the president. And he's been so vocal in the past about the need to slash spending on entitlement programs like Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. What does that mean for these debates and conversations? Because it just feels like, oh, the person who's driving this now has been very clear about his no compromise positions.
Yeah. As I said, the Ukraine thing, I think, is the biggest threat right now. So I think that's issue number one.
Because he's voted against Ukraine funding in the past.
Yeah, every time. Yeah, every time he's voted against Ukraine funding. And, you know, and there's been no even whispers that, like, that was part of the deal to get him through. So I do think I felt this way about McCarthy when he first got in, that, you know, you all get everybody gets one pass, you know, and when they get in there. And I do think that he'll get a pass to deal with the budget in a way that can get through the Senate and onto the president's desk this time. I don't know if there'll be additional wheeling and dealing on that or what that's going to look like exactly, but I think that he'll get some leash within the Republican conference to do that. But in the future, I think that we're looking at severe, severe brinksmanship on government funding in 2024.
So you're saying don't be fooled, like if things look normal for the next couple months.
That's what I'm saying. And then I think that he will revert to the hardline ideologue that he's been.
You spent years as a Republican operative, and I thought it would be interesting to talk to you in this moment because I feel like I've just lived through these wild swings of Republican identity during the speaker race. Like literally Tuesday, there was someone who was a speaker designate who believed the polar opposite of what the current speaker, now elected, believes, like according to votes. I mean, who knows what they really believe, but had voted in totally opposite directions. I guess I wonder, do you feel like Johnson's election really points to like, no, this is the Republican Party now?
Yeah, I do. I don't even know actually if Johnson is the final manifestation of what the Republican Party is now. Like, I really think that the animating issues for Republicans right now are completely different than they were in 20 years ago. There's some similarities. There obviously, you know, is a line from Pat Buchanan to now and a line from Newt Gingrich to now. But if you ask somebody in 1996 in the House Republican Conference, like, what are the things that animate you? It's smaller government, lower taxes, maybe abortion, strong military, right? Like, that's the old three-legged stool of the Republican Party. If you ask the new class of Republicans what it is now, it's wokeness. You know, it's the woke mind virus. It is immigration. It is receding America from the world. And, you know, maybe it's also for some of them, smaller government and abortion. Right. So there's some things that overlap, but there have been other issues that are totally changed. And I think that the types of politicians that, you know, kind of were those old Chamber of Commerce Republicans that have been hanging on in the House, like, they are representatives of a time gone by.
They're dinosaurs.
Yeah, it was only a matter of time before they were overthrown. And frankly, I think that they lasted longer than I expected.
Is there such a thing as an anti-MAGA Republican now?
No, there isn't. Sure, at like city council level and mayor level. We have a great mayor of Oklahoma City that's a Republican, right? Yeah, sure. But as far as in Congress, in D.C., an anti-MAGA Republican, I mean, the only one left is Mitt, and he's, you know, getting shown the door. The party has embraced MAGA, and the remaining members, it's just a question of, are you the type of politician that is native to MAGA?
Are you a native speaker of MAGA?
Yeah, right. Are you a native speaker? Are you to embrace it? Or are you, you know, one of the older Republican types who are kind of going along to get along with MAGA?
MAGA is a second language.
Greg Sargent, I think, defined him as, I think it was, there were three groups. There's vulgar MAGA, which is the Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan, refined MAGA, which is the Mike Johnson, and then there's like pretend MAGA or whatever, and that's, you know, Kevin McCarthy. I think that's basically, that those are basically the groups at this point.
Tim Miller, I'm really grateful for your time and your analysis. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, happy to do it. Anytime. Thanks for calling.
Tim Miller is the Bulwark's writer at large. He's also the author of Why We Did It, a travelogue from the Republican road to hell. And that's our show. What Next is produced by Paige Osborne, Elena Schwartz, Rob Gunther, Madeline Ducharme, and Anna Phillips. We are led by Alicia Montgomery with a little boost from Susan Matthews. Ben Richmond is the senior director of podcast operations here at Slate. And I'm Mary Harris. Thanks for listening. I'll catch you next time.